and welcome to Research VR Podcast, episode number 11, where we dig deep into virtual reality with cognitive science and economic research. For those of you joining us for the first time, Research VR is a weekly podcast dedicated to breaking down years of virtual reality research into a digestible form and discussing the current economic trends of the industry around the world. In today's episode, we're discussing with Jeffrey Skoe from Fishbowl VR, what we can expect from the first wave of consumer VR content. Hello, Jeffrey. Hello, Christoph. And hello, Peter.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
It's good. Great for you to be here. So let's talk about Fishbowl VR, actually. What's your, I guess, five-second pitch on what Fishbowl is?
Yeah, so we're an on-demand playtesting and analytics platform for VR developers. So we've got a remote panel of hundreds of early adopters. They record themselves playing and giving feedback on apps, and in doing so, help developers kind of figure out what works and what doesn't in VR.
And how did you actually came to this topic? I mean, how did you yourself found out that you were interested in virtual reality and actually ended up doing it?
Yeah, I guess that's kind of two things. There's the virtual reality on one hand and then usability testing on the other. I've been interested in VR for, more than 20 years. My dad's company used to do kind of combat flight simulators in the 90s. That was my first exposure to that. And I remember seeing a VR arcade overseas when I was like 14 or something. I was so hooked. Of course, VR didn't take off then. Between the Oculus Kickstarter and picking up Ready Player One, it just really captured my imagination. And when I got back to the Bay Area, just kind of swore that I would try to get my hands on and demo as much stuff as possible. And it's kind of steamrolled from there.
So did you develop something yourself or prototype something yourself?
No, my interest, I've been involved with a lot of startups here in the Bay Area and then previously down in San Diego, and I've always kind of been a big advocate of usability testing as well as analytics, whether that means taking your laptop down to a coffee shop and having someone use your app and give you feedback, or whether that's using a service like usertesting.com. I was a huge advocate, but my interest in VR was really more strictly as a consumer. Although I think all of us, when we use VR, you immediately think of 5 or 10 things that you want to see done. And I don't think I'm any different in that regard.
That's quite amazing. I mean,
were you a Kickstarter backer actually of the first Oculus?
I was not, just kind of followed from afar. I wish I would have.
Right. I know, right? What would you say your first VR experience was?
Well, I was thinking back kind of in the lead up to this. I was thinking about some of those apps, like Dactyl Nightmare was one of those ones in the 1990s. I don't know if you guys are even old enough to remember some of those VR arcades. But I do remember when I got back to the Bay Area over in Golden Gate Park at the, what's the name of that venue? I demoed the Birdly VR simulator. Have you guys tried that?
We actually spoke about it, but I don't think we tested it, right?
Not that I remember.
Yeah. Was it cool?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of those experiences, especially seeing in the venue I was at, it wasn't, VR developers or VR enthusiasts even, to see people use that and then to do it myself. I mean, flying right by the building that I was working in my kind of 9-to-5 business, just such an amazing experience, and just was like, okay, I think I had determined then, I wasn't sure how at all that I was going to be involved in VR professionally, but I knew that I would in some way.
Okay. And regards Fishbowl VR, so when did the company actually started to exist and what's your growth curve?
That's a good question. I started doing VR meetups with, I'm like that, the Upload guys who started, doing meetups, and then Carl Kranz hosts the SVVR meetups, Matt Sonic, the SFVR. I started going to a lot of meetups. I also hosted a couple, again, just trying to demo and get an excuse to try out as much stuff as possible. And then in demoing things, I just kind of observed that people were struggling to get really good feedback on what they were building. And again, because I have an experience kind of championing usability in my professional life on web and mobile, kind of asked around, in the lead and startup model, just kind of asking people if this is something that they would like, what issues were they seeing. And so we threw up a landing page, posted a link on the Oculus subreddit to get some people to sign up to test, and kind of took it from there. That would have been about cool. More than a year ago. Although for quite a long time, it was kind of a nights and weekends thing. And then now it's more, it's an honest to goodness full-time job.
So since it's a full-time job and it's seems like a very serious business, what sort of usability methods are you using?
Yeah, I mean, I think at a high level, it's unmoderated playtesting. I find that that's the most valuable thing that can be offered right now. So to get people who aren't biased in any way, who are in the comfort of their home environment, just as they would be as an end consumer, to take a given application, use it as they normally would without any instruction. We do offer the ability to target specific types of users, right? So whether that's, you know, demographics, location, et cetera, you can also have people do specific things if you're interested in them, whether that's a level or whether that's a particular element of gameplay or a mechanic that you're interested in getting feedback on. But for the most part, it's really just giving the application to someone to download and then having them record their natural experience using the product and then narrating their experience. So I guess just really quickly, so our testing panel, again, there are hundreds of them spread out around the globe. They record both what they're seeing via webcam and then what they're doing in virtual reality, so that view, and then they have a mic on and they narrate their experience, which isn't always kind of the most natural thing to do, but with a little bit of practice, starts to come second nature. And then
just kind of like speaking your mind as you're doing the task, right? It's like, it's first time user experience test. You put them in somewhere and you essentially say, okay, say, oh, it's, I think it's called speaking out loud, like everything you're doing or you're, you know, even all your mental models and things of the app that's in front of you. It's like, okay, I'm trying to go into the game now and I'm looking for the, you know, something like that. I'm guessing, I mean, there's a lot of different ways of capturing that data of the usability. And with microphone and webcam and, you know, screen recording, you can kind of get a good amount of data. I guess, can you talk about more about your methods? Cause I'm sure a lot of like the developers that are listening in would like to figure out how they could have more testing done. Cause that's the number one thing in VR is you need to really test it all the way through.
Yeah, we're super strict around the methods for instructing people about, you know, specifically what they talk about. It's more even kind of one-to-one just in reviewing people's, you know, playtest recordings, you know, encouraging them to be more vocal. But I think the developers themselves, having gone through different applications, you don't need too much narration around kind of what you're doing. That's kind of self-evident. It's more about areas where you're specifically, you know, confused or you're going to go try to do something and it doesn't work. So pointing out areas where your expectations as a consumer aren't met by the application. And those are the kinds of insights that are most valuable and really kind of why we exist.
Very cool. What unusual things have your testers found, I guess, or you even... I'm guessing when you're reviewing tapes and you're just like, whoa, like, why would they even go about doing that or something completely unusual?
So I want to stay positive here.
but those insights are good though.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can imagine just as a user having gone through a bunch of different applications. I was just watching, I don't know if you guys saw this Steam VR developer roundtable that they posted. There were two videos from that Valve produced. Chet Falachek was the kind of moderator. I think it was on that, but Alex at Alchemy Labs was talking about, I think it was there, I might be mixing up my sources here, but talking about how, you know, their to-do lists for Job Simulator are really observing people in that environment. And then when they try to do something they think they can do and they can't, that is a new, you know, line item for their, you know, to-do list. And I think that a lot of developers have that experience. Just the more that you observe users naturally, you know, experiencing your app, you're going to come up with things where in your head you thought they would do X and they end up doing Y, or they didn't do X, or they didn't do anything and they're confused.
Right.
And it's funny you mentioned actually Alchemy Labs and Job Simulator, because it is through user testing that they discovered that they actually needed to spend so much time modeling water in a cup, or just liquid in cups. And just because people would pick them up and then try to do things with them and try to drink them. And it just was like, once their expectations were not being met by the physics of the world, then they needed to go back to the drawing board and figure out the different interactions that someone can do. And you can't get that if you're the person doing that.
But that means there are a lot of things that we actually don't notice in our everyday life that are like super tough to program in games, right? I mean, even with the leap motion, how do you actually really grab an object, not just pinch it, but actually use the physics of the hands, right? I mean, the leap motion SDK describes it as super complex, and also all this fluid behavior and stuff. That's something that you usually would not, you know, interact and change it. So it would be, you know, fixed programmed in a normal game. So it's very interesting how users react to those things, right?
The solution might be here to just avoid those tricky situations. So you avoid glass with water inside, but as I tested last weekend, I would expect that if I see a book, that I can open it. However, in the job simulator, I actually can't open a book because there is no physics for that.
I feel like that's harder than even trying to simulate water in a cup. It's trying to simulate turn paging in a book. Another actually point I wanted to make with, so usertesting.com, like I've tried it before, especially in college, you're just like, okay, I want to make a quick dollar, excuse me. And, you know, I'll try out these, I'll be a tester. Usertesting.com is honestly the worst from a user's perspective, because you keep getting barraged with like, first of all, you're trying to get tests. And you have your demographic, and they don't give you tests unless you match specific demographics. And then sometimes you're like, oh, I got a match for a thing, I should go into it. Then they give you a pre-screening test. And then if you answer one question wrong, in a sense, like, okay, I shop 2 times a week instead of 5 times a week, then they don't give you that test. So you're getting constantly barraged with these notifications to these tests that you're not even going to take at the end. And it's so annoying. And I didn't make a single dollar from that website. So I hope Fishbowl doesn't run into similar problems with trying to match people to their demographics.
I also hope we don't run into that, although I think those are first world problems from a standpoint. You know, I was going to say...
You're absolutely right.
You know, more broadly, I think, and especially apropos for this group, I'll have to send you this link. I should have in advance, but... You know, there's some really interesting research around kind of exposure hours to user testing, or not to user testing, but to customer observation, right? So, you know, where you can completely correlate the number of hours that a given team spends observing the end consumer using an application, not just VR, right? Whatever it is, even if it's a physical product. And it's positively correlated with improvements in user experience. I've always found that to be the case, and I find our hypothesis here, and I think it's bearing out, is that that's going to be especially true in VR, where it's not, you know, a QA person's job to necessarily go observe all this stuff and write some report, but that it's in the interest of all members of the team to really observe how people are using their product in the current state that it's in, or using their application. And that has really positive effects kind of across the board, and how the team rallies to improve things, or is able to better, you know, prioritize things that they need to focus on, since we, you know, there are only a limited number of, you know, hours in a day or week.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, user-centered design is probably one of the biggest inventions, I'll say, or at least the new kind of standard that people need to create whatever product they're creating. And I think even more importantly for VR now, because it is the most human technology. That's kind of how I like to describe it, because it's essentially emulating all these perceptual systems that you have. And so if you're not testing it on people and trying to get an outside perspective, you miss so much. And so... You have like a great market that you're tapping into, I have to say, Jeff. And I haven't seen anyone else trying to do any kind of usability, like outsourcing usability testing.
VR is a unique medium. You know, going back to my days doing analytics at, I've typically worked at a lot of like online marketplaces, right? You can kind of, especially with traditional analytics, you know, they're kind of these off the shelf or easy to customize, you know, analytics funnels, right? So, okay, I'm selling shoes. How many people come to my website and then search for a product and then add it to the cart, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But how do you measure, you know, a degree of immersion, whether immersion is broken in a person? So that's, I think that's another kind of check mark on the side of, you know, VR being especially suited or wanting for this kind of observational feedback.
Actually, that kind of leads into these other companies kind of called behavioral analytics companies in VR. There's actually a couple of them that I've already seen. One is Retinad, EaseVR. And so, like, do you see yourself kind of using their services as well to kind of add to your usability? Or actually, are they competitors? I guess that's a perhaps a different field.
I know all those guys. I don't know if it's because I think 2/3 of them are Canadian that everyone is so nice. and then PK over at EaseVR, all those guys are doing great stuff. We haven't focused on traditional analytics. I don't know that we will. And then, of course, where I think those guys are doing more traditional analytics, maybe less so EaseVR. I'm super fascinated in a lot of the data collection that's being done with things like wearables, right? So can we track, you know, whether that's heart rate or, you know, way down the line, like brain waves. So there's all kinds of, I think, interesting ways that we'll be able to see biological reaction to VR and how that might inform how you design a given product. But at this point, you know, we're pretty exclusively focused on play testing and then related, you know, analytics directly related to that. So we collect things around how long a person, you know, for example, plays. We have them rate different elements of a given experience. We kind of have these default lists of questions we ask afterwards. So, you know, how would you rate the degree of immersion? How would you rate the auditory experience, your level of comfort, the intuitiveness of the menu or the control? So we're really focused on collecting data around that so that you can benchmark performance over time, and less so doing things like heat maps. You know, so whether that means we integrate their products into ours or, you know, I'm not really sure. But I wish them all the great. It's great to see startups and people that love VR working on to solve problems. So
just to summarize, what's the work done on your side about those tests? What's the work on your side? So are you analyzing questionnaires? Are you post-processing videos?
So on the developer side, you come in and you say, you know, I'm developing for, and then pick platform, right? So whether it's the Rift, the Vive, Gear, Cardboard, are there any specific types of people that I want to target? What am I looking to get feedback on? And then we really serve a middleman role, right? So we'll then, we'll make those tests available to our remote panel, which is, you know, several hundred people strong. They'll record themselves and then, yeah, we process the video and we kind of, I'll continue a link, but we combine all of this data into kind of an easy to digest dashboard that shows the videos, the scores, the demographic makeup that the team can kind of then, you know, view together, annotate, et cetera.
Cool. Yeah. So there is some processing happening from your guys' end so that it's not just a link dump of videos and questionnaires I'm sure they have access to the raw data from the developer standpoint, but it's more of like they want to see like, okay, what were the results that you received and like, what kind of correlations can I make here?
Yeah. And then what's hopefully interesting, especially as we start to collect more and more data, would be ways to anonymize but also surface some of the data like that's consistently collected across applications so that you can start to benchmark across other applications in your particular, you know, genre or just in general. I think that would be so, you know, there's the idea of a particular application improving among different characteristics over the time that it's developed, since we typically are doing testing kind of on a regular cadence in advance of a consumer release, but then also how are you comparing against, you know, the industry at large or similar applications?
Following up directly on this idea, have you seen any pattern among the apps that you've been testing or that were tested on your platform? Like, for example, the most often made error. in the user experience?
You know, especially in advance of these consumer launches, you've seen a lot of ink spilled on, you know, simulator sickness, because I think it's kind of, it's a bit clickbaity, I think. I think one of the nice things about the VR development community is that everyone has been so collaborative and open about sharing lessons learned and best practices. And I feel like a lot of the things that perhaps people were causing user discomfort or sickness in the earlier kind of Oculus Share days have generally been addressed. And now we're getting into more meatier things about, you know, just what's compelling and what is the cadence of play? How often do you play? I mean, there still are things that jump out. But again, I think a lot of those will be solved in near time. Some things that jump out are, and I'm sure you have all experienced this, but like the legibility of text, right? It's like you have to be, if the text isn't giant, you know, you just assume, like with any web application or mobile app, that people are going to read stuff. But unless you make it just like, Fantastic Contraption does a good job of this, of really teaching users, you know, what does what with kind of giant text that's easy to read. But a lot of times I see where, you know, it's like, oh, well, why didn't they read that? Well, it's because you need to make it like super huge. I guess some other things, I still feel like audio is maybe an underappreciated area. And I, you know, this is more anecdotal, but it feels like it's oftentimes for some developers, something that's more tacked on than kind of integrated from the jump. But that not that when audio, when 360 audio kind of isn't done well, that it can really lead to, you know, to the breaking of immersion. And that's an area where I think there's still a whole lot of innovation and understanding to be had, which is super exciting.
Go ahead. The benefits of Skype, right?
Yeah. Regards the audio, when we speak about the virtual realities we are kind of immersed in right now, basically have two senses we can really mix up with and, you know, pretend that there is a virtual world. There's the visual and the audio system. And apparently, at least that's what I learned from a few people on the meetup I have been with Chris on the Sunday in Cologne, that the auditory system is kind of unfiltered. So when you hear things, you kind of believe in them. The lady was from, what was it?
Illusion Walk.
Illusion Walk. They are trying to build a holodeck. And apparently they can pretend that you are on an elevator just with sounds. You're standing and you're having the headset on and you're thinking that the elevator moves up and down, and they create this immersion, this feeling basically just by playing around with 360 audio. So I think you're absolutely right.
That's super interesting. But I think more basically, you know, we always talk about kind of the lizard brain, where if you're scanning the horizon and something, you know, you might not even be able to convey, you know, with words why something's off, but it's off. And that's the big challenge, but also the opportunity for developers. And I think audio is very similar in that you know, your kind of lizard brain just expects audio in these virtual worlds to act as it would in the real world. And when it doesn't, there's a
subconscious thing. It just doesn't feel as real as it would have. And you can't really point, you know, unless you're actually trained or looking for it, you can't really put your finger on as to why it's not, you know, fully convincing. You're completely right. Audio is definitely, since like VR headsets, you know, they're these big HMDs, and the audio is kind of like a secondary addition to things, or at least that's how people perceive it to be. Audio is kind of left on the back burner. And I have to say, honestly, in terms of immersion, Valve's experiment, Valve's lab, anything Valve has put out there, their audio is so good. Every time I go in there, I'm completely immersed just because of the sound of the humming of the machines next to me, you know, and the way they spatialize them and the way they handle reflections. Those are super, super important, and they don't really come out to you as much as, unless you're looking for them, but they make or break the immersion. So that's kind of a thing to note from any developer standpoint.
Well, and it's probably not unrelated that Valve has long been a huge champion of playtesting, right? So we were up in Seattle for the Techstars Accelerator program, and they were nice enough to invite us over a few times. They've got their full-on like playtesting, whatever you want to call it, office set up there. But they've been, they're huge believers and champions of playtesting, and I don't think it's a coincidence that a lot of what they come out with, once it reaches the end consumer, is done incredibly well.
So currently, what platforms have Fishbowl kind of been testing for? Obviously, like you started with DK2s, if you started a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's more of a function of developer kit availability, right? There were far fewer Vive Pre's available, and there were what, like 180,000 DK2s shipped, or 200K or something like that.
So on which platform did you had the most applications to test? Was it on Gear VR, on DK2, Cardboard?
It was almost exclusively DK2 testing. But now with Gear having been out, and then of course now Gear VR shipping with, I know I got my Gear free with my phone, and they're all nice. Shipping with S7. And then if we can get some of these shipment issues figured out, we're starting to see requests for content from other platforms, specifically Gear VR, but then also on the Vive.
Does Fishbowl, support kind of recording things for the Gear VR, and now, I guess, with the CV1 and Vive, or are those going to be integrated, down the line?
Yeah, no, we're completely agnostic when it comes to the type of platform, right? So our panel uses their own hardware. We work to set up best practices for recording an experience for different headsets, but, we have no inclination one way or the other. We just want to help developers test VR content for whatever platform.
Yeah. And quick question. How do you do these recordings for the Gear VR in terms of screen capture and audio, I guess?
Yeah, the Gear's been a little hacky. One of our testers, VR Gamer Dude, Don, he's got a cool YouTube channel. You should check it out. He's put up some tutorials for some different ways. You can use, apps like Recordable. I think Samsung now has kind of like a default thing you can download from Google Play. Mm-hmm. But you're basically, mirroring it on the PC to get that split screen view. There's also an update to the Gear SDK, which I need to make a note to follow back up on. But it's all imminently.
Have you actually tried Chromecast? So I actually had some problems with it in the beginning when the SDK was quite raw.
Yeah, we have had some people use Chromecast. Yeah, and I've also run into some issues. And it varies by phone and all kinds of setup.
Next question. How much of the serious content did you had to test through your platform? So by serious content, I mean applications for marketing or medical applications, or maybe even industrial applications.
I object to the presumption that marketing apps are serious. No. as you might imagine, we've primarily tested on games and entertainment, although it's not specifically games. We have done some stuff around language learning, and we're starting to talk to more companies around retail as well as more enterprise applications. But to date, the vast majority of testing we've done, more than 90%, has been on games and entertainment. So whether that means content discovery within VR or cinematic VR, more 360 video kind of storytelling of the like that kind of the jaunts of the world do, whether it's social, like an alt-based VR, or whether it's games. But definitely games and entertainment has been where we've been focused, but fully expect that to to broaden over time as those developers or people interested in those spaces start to develop more content and you see wider adoption of VR generally.
Based on those few 10% of serious content, can you already tell us about some differences between quality of entertainment and serious content, or maybe some other design differences?
I mean, it's pretty, it would be pretty subjective. If I haven't, there's nothing that jumps out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think some, I think in those kinds of applications are much more practical, right? So maybe they're less sexy, but they're no less, there's no less kind of thought or talent put into the execution, if that's what you're asking.
We tapped out sort of on the topic of how the apps look till now. Let's speculate a little how the apps will look like on the new consumer version of Oculus and the new HTC Vive.
I mean, we can talk about how you, have you seen kind of like the changes happening throughout this year of testing of like, have you seen the quality of the content actually improving with the results that you're providing and just with overall more testing from their end as well? Any thoughts on that?
It's definitely improving. I think one interesting thing that I think you guys will probably concur as consumers, you know, once you are using your hands in VR, there kind of is no going back, right? It's like,
I mean,
I remember demoing like Lucky's Tale early on, like you're like these third person platformers you might not have thought would work, or, you know, Edge of Nowhere, Chronos, they're awesome. It's like, wow, this is really cool. And they're great. Don't get me wrong. But then, like, once you use your hands and you do fantastic contraption or tilt brush, there's just like an order of magnitude. And so I think what you're seeing is developers have that same, like, kind of once they, and again, this is completely anecdotal, but once you're able to think about how a user can use their hands in a virtual world, that just opens up so many more possibilities, and it's just much more exciting kind of prospect.
You know, last weekend I had a chance to test Oculus consumer version, and just after that, the new HTC Vive with its controllers. And first of all, Oculus consumer version is a completely different level of ergonomics. This is a different galaxy of user experience, just a physical user experience of having head-mounted display on your face than any other head-mounted display I tested. And I tested a lot of them.
Your mind seems to be blown.
There was just recently a teardown from iFixit that is actually showing the amount of stuff in the Oculus. There are like so many parts that are actually there to make sure that it fits nice. So springs, all kind of wheels and, you know, things that hold it right. And also the lenses are, which I actually didn't know before I read the iFixit teardown, curved in a way that if you move the headset slightly up or down, you can adjust how it looks for you dependent on your eyes. So if your eyes are rather, you know, better at looking in the far, you kind of move the headset slightly up. Or if your eyes are vice versa, you kind of move it down, which is also very interesting. That's how they saved the necessity for three different lenses.
And then I had a second step. I did my best to find an error in tracking. I wanted the camera to lose the range. I wanted the camera to, you know, like have a break, you know, some problem with refresh rate. I have never experienced such a smooth tracking in my life.
What are you talking about? The Vive or the Oculus?
The head mounted, the tracking of the head for Oculus. It was so smooth that I could not feel a difference from the real world. It blew me away. I mean, I spent 5 minutes moving around just trying to find an error there. I couldn't.
It reminds me of an anecdote. I was at the last, at Oculus Connect 2, at least I think it was there, and I was in line for the demo. And the guy in front of me was like, it was like he was doing calisthenics and he's rolling around on the ground. I'm like, God, what's up with this guy? And he came from, you know, a military application background and was kind of warming up. He was like, he was warming up to put the Rift through its paces. Like, this thing, I'm going to make sure this thing can track. I'm sure he's trying to emulate, you know, what a soldier might. But I was like, what is this guy doing? And then, okay. He's trying to. And I think I checked in with him afterwards, and he was blown away even then. And, you know, like Moore's Law, these are just going to continue to even get better.
Yeah. Once we, you know, cut that cord off of the HMDs, oh my God, I will be so happy. So happy. I mean, even with the Vive and having the entire room scale to play with, I still feel, you know, I've even developed my, what they're calling this kind of a line feeling that you have on the side? Like you intrinsically know how to move around with this cord coming off of you, and to the point that you stop thinking about it, but it's still such a factor. It still grounds me, and it still keeps me facing the certain direction in this room, because I know if I do that, then the cord will be behind me and I'm not going to, have to feel it and fidget with it. But I know it absolutely breaks immersion, and it just, you're trying to fiddle with this real world while trying to interact with this really cool virtual world. And I mean, we're going to get to the point where inside out tracking is just spot on, to the point that we don't even need these lighthouses to kind of put up there, because the lighthouses are still let's talk about have you done like much, any playtesting on the Vive at all? I guess, had your users do that?
Yeah, we're kind of just really spinning that
up. Right, because the pre is still pretty new, and even the consumer version is out. But like there's still tracking issues that happen, not whenever they're working right, but just like the lighthouses, suddenly they either lose sight of each other, or they lose sight of... there's a lot of issues. I think from a UX standpoint and just from usability, like the CV1, I noticed even when you just put it on, it's all suddenly on. Like you turn your computer on, you don't have to turn Steam on, you don't have to turn Steam VR on. You just put on the Oculus and it works. The Vive is a little bit more finicky, I think, but it has more features.
I was going to say VR tennis online, but selfie tennis.
Yeah, that's a funny one.
But yeah, I mean, there was definitely issues with, I have to recalibrate, but still super exciting.
Yeah.
By the way, do you also test Leap Motion apps? With Oculus, obviously, but...
Yeah. Most, as you might imagine, the panel skews, like if you're looking at a technology adoption lifecycle curve, we're at like the pretty far left of the far left. So a lot of members of the panel have Leap stuff, and then we've had, you had developers for their, whether it's apps coming out of their game jams or whatever, but we've definitely done testing using that.
What's your take on Leap Motion? What's the experience of your testers?
Oh, I don't... Can I dodge that one?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Just move your head so that head tracking can record your head moving in virtual reality, and then you can dodge.
Okay, maybe you can actually tell us what's your impression from, the old SDK to Orion SDK from Leap. Have you any experience with that? Okay. Okay, fine.
That's fine. I think they're even still trying to figure out where they're going to be in this VR market, because none of the major three seems to want to work with them, because they all have their own tracking methods, and it's kind of sad that they're not going for hand as well. But they've partnered with OSVR, and they're going to be integrated into their HMDs, which is interesting.
But you know what? I've been playing for the last few months mainly with Leap Motion as a tracking device. And then last weekend I tested again HTC Vive controllers. And I have to admit, I was sort of disappointed.
Really?
I was disappointed because I had a feeling that, first of all, my hands moving, just finger tracking, felt much more natural through Leap Motion. And second of all, I had the feeling that I can do more. Even in this limited space that Leap Motion is providing, I had a feeling that with Leap Motion, I have more options to do than with HTC Vive controllers.
That's somewhat true. And actually, as a quick anecdote, I got my parents to go into the Vive, and just that brought about a whole set of problems I'd never even considered about. Honestly, it's still not that intuitive that you don't get the finger placement right. If you don't have your thumbs on the thumb pad, then they don't know what to do with that. If I tell them press a trigger, then they're thinking, what am I doing? Or the buttons on top and below the thumb pads, those are not that intuitive at all. And I think the touch is going to be much, much better for any random person to pick it up and actually hold it right and have the fingers on buttons and actually have more accessibility to more features like buttons and things to do on a touch than the Vive. So
yeah. Actually, I had my own personal problem with HTC Vive controllers. When I was playing Hover Junkers, I was accidentally switching the weapon mode because my hand was still sort of staying on the trackpad, on the touchpad on the controller, and I was accidentally pressing it.
Yeah, definitely. There's some growing pains that we'll have to all figure out, right, Jeff? All right. Well, thank you, Jeff, and thanks for everyone for tuning in to another episode of Research VR. Hope you enjoyed listening to it and learned something new. Absolutely. Do you want to give our listeners a way for them to contact you, or how can they find you?
Yeah, so we're fishbowlvr.com. You can email me, Jeff, G-E-O-F-F, at fishbowlvr.com, or my co-founder, Josh, our CTO, just Josh at fishbowlvr, if you have maybe more technical questions, and we'd love to talk to you.
Awesome. And hit them up if you have something you're working on and you need more users to test. Topic suggestions, guest invites, and all other feedback are helpful. Feel free to contact us under researchvrcast@gmail.com or via Twitter at researchvrcast. You can find all of our Twitters at azadux, at izdipsky_rodior, and at Razilio. I don't know if we're going to mention these anymore. You can just see it in the show notes.
Yeah, they're hard to read.
rate us on iTunes, help spread this podcast. And special thanks to Nurses Balabanian for the intro and outro music. That's my dad. He makes some cool music. So, all right, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us. Bye.
Yes, thank you.
Goodbye.